Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carvel. Coming up tonight, the state versus its citizens.
Would you stop making a political football of this? You hurt us when you do that. You tear the shreds from inside our body. For God's sake, try and give us some peace.
It's our late debate tonight after the news, which is read now by Una O'Hagan.
Good evening. The Northern Ireland Ambulance Service has declared a major incident at the Odyssey Arena in Belfast. It's reported that up to 60 young people are being treated for the ill effects of either alcohol or drugs. A number of ambulances are at the scene and several hospitals have been put on standby. A concert at the venue is believed to be ongoing. A new inspection has been carried out on a lift in Galway where a three-year-old boy died last month. The boy sustained fatal injuries when he became trapped in the lift shaft at the Hines building in the city centre on January 13th. Our Western correspondent, Pat McGrath.
Inspectors from the Health and Safety Authority and a forensic engineer working on behalf of the boy's mother, Omolara Alibi, visited the building on St Augustine Street this afternoon. Ms Alibi's solicitor, Gerard O'Donnell, said a number of tests and trial runs were carried out on the lift. The HSA inquiry into the boy's death is ongoing. Mr O'Donnell said one possibility being examined was that pressure was put on the internal door of the lift after Salman Saremican entered it, causing the lift car to stop and the door to open between floors. This may explain how he fell into the lift shaft. Pat McGrath, RTE News, Galway.
The search is continuing for an 18-year-old Irish student who is missing in London. Patrick Halpin from Loughrea in County Galway hasn't been seen since he left a nightclub near Leicester Square on Tuesday night. It was reported earlier that he had boarded a flight to Dublin with his friends from Dublin City University's Drama Society, but police later confirmed that the information was inaccurate. A 29-year-old motorcyclist has died following a road crash in County Westmeath. The collision between a car and the man's motorbike happened near Ballinlough Castle just before 6 o'clock. The road between Delvin and Clonmellon will remain closed overnight.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Liberty Insurance. Forecasting great value home insurance.
Dry tonight in most areas, but scattered showers will continue in Atlantic coastal areas. Very cold with lowest temperatures of plus 1 to minus 2 degrees. Friday will be mainly dry and bright at first, but patchy rain and drizzle will develop during the day. Heavier rain with strong and gusty winds will extend from the southwest in the afternoon. Highest temperatures 5 to 8 degrees. That's all for now. There'll be news again at 11.
Una, thank you very much. You're very welcome back to The Late Debate. Tonight, we are focusing on the people in Ireland who have been abused by the state, whether physically, sexually, or by Victorian surgical procedures, and whom the state has fought tooth and nail to prevent the delivery of justice. We will examine what is happening with compensation and redress schemes for the Magdalen survivors, the survivors of the barbaric symphysiotomy procedures. It would appear that despite much publicised apologies and investigations, very little redress has actually been passed on to the people affected. On the programme tonight, I'm joined from Cork by Louise O'Keefe. As you know by now, Louise fought the state through the courts for nearly 20 years to get them to admit responsibility for the abuse she suffered at the hands of her school principal, Leo Hickey, when she was 8 years old. And she eventually won her case in Strasbourg last week. Here in Dublin are Stephen O'Riordan from the Magdalen Survivors Together Group, and who, along with the survivors themselves, fought for an apology and redress for the women's experiences. Also here is Ruan MacAidan, barrister and advisor to the survivors of symphysiotomy, Justine McCarthy, columnist with the Sunday Times, and Fine Gael TD Alan Farrell, who sits on the Justice Committee of the Oireachtas. You're all very welcome indeed. First, though, a grim reminder of some of the horrific cases of abuse revealed over the past 5 years and the attempts by consecutive governments to fight the survivors every step of the way. Donal O'Hurley reports.
It's a somewhat sad indictment if one looks for examples of groups that suffered at the hands of the state and then had to fight tooth and nail for any acknowledgement of fault, because one need not look far. If we take a small snapshot of the last 5 years, there's a remarkably large number of people who have had to endure a long battle for justice with the very state that neglected them. First, there were those that suffered in institutions supervised and funded by the Department of Education. The Ryan Report finally emerged in 2009. It had taken 10 years and the resignation of Judge Lefoy to report into abuse that had taken place as far back as 1936. Perhaps most memorably, Michael O'Brien appeared on Questions and Answers, expressing the absolute frustration of having been ignored by government after government after government, before lambasting Noel Dempsey for what he called the government's mealy-mouthed apology.
You made a complete bags of it at that time, because I went to the Laffoy Commission and you had seven barristers there questioning me and telling them I was telling lies when I told them that I got raped of a Saturday, got a merciful beating after it, and then he came along the following morning and put Holy Communion in my mouth. You don't know what happened there. You haven't the foggiest, you're talking through your hat there, and you're talking to a Fianna Fáil man, a former councillor, a former mayor. You're talking to, that what tooth and nail for you, for the party that you're talking about now. You didn't do it right. You got it wrong. Admit it, and apologise for doing that. Because you don't know what I feel inside me. You don't know the hurt I am. You said 'twas non-adversatorial. My God. Seven barristers throwing questions at us, non-stop. I attempted to commit suicide. There's the woman who saved me from committing suicide on my way down from Dublin after spending 5 days at the commission. 5 days I spent at the commission. They brought a man over from Rome, 90-odd years of age, to tell me I was telling lies, that I wasn't beaten for an hour, non-stop, by two of them. By two of them, non-stop, from head to toe, without a shred of cloth on my body. My God, Minister, and could I speak to you and ask your leader, would you stop making a political football of this? You hurt us when you do that. You tear the shreds from inside our body. For God's sake, try and give us some peace. Try and give us some peace and not to continue hurting us. That woman will tell you how many times I jump out of the bed at night with the sweat pumping out of me because I see these fellas at the end of the bed with their fingers doing that to me and pulling me into the room to rape me, to bugger me and bait the shite out of me.
The Ryan report, it's worth mentioning, was prevented by the government from calling for the sanction or prosecution of any of the groups involved. Then, of course, there were the victims of symphysiotomy, a horrific procedure which an estimated 1,500 women were unknowingly or without consent subjected to from 1944 to 1992. We had the Walsh report, followed last year by a statute of limitations bill, unanimously supported by the Dáil, to allow all survivors to bring their cases through the courts. Despite the support, though, it almost instantly began to stall at committee level, and the women marched on the Dáil.
My name is Matilda Behan. And the reason why we're here today is because we're all at least over 50 years looking for justice for the butchery that was performed on us.
I think they're waiting for us to die, but he has another thing coming because I have no intention of dying. And if I do, I'll haunt him.
I was so badly butchered, my pelvis was broke, my pubic bone was sawed in half. I have dreadful injuries internal. My whole inside actually nearly fell down. To wear trousers and pads and everything to keep me supported.
The result of all this? Well, the government announced less than 3 months ago that they wouldn't be supporting any bill lifting the statute of limitations and appointed another judge to review the findings of a report that was published 2 years ago. Perhaps the groups that have received the most attention over the last 5 years are those that represented survivors of the Magdalen laundries.
When I left the industrial school anyway, so I went to work at an old folks' home in Ennis, County Clare. And whilst I was there, I was a wardsmaid. I was there maybe a couple of months, maybe 3 months at least, when I was talking to a porter. The next day was Sunday, and I was bundled into this taxi. And I didn't know what was going on. And I was taken to the Magdalen Laundry in Galway. I was crying quite a lot, because there was two nuns, one on either side of me. And I cried and I cried and I cried. And I knew what the Magdalen Laundry was. It was like a prison.
The two nuns put me on the train. They were with me and brought me into Hyde Park. And I went into Hyde Park. And like I said, the first thing they did was took all my clothes, give me a big serge skirt, a big white apron, a cap and some boots. And told me, your name now from now will be a tractor and your number will be 63.
The state studiously washed their hands of the women, saying that their abuse had taken place in private institutions. This is what the Secretary General of the Department of Justice had to say to the UN in 2011.
These alleged events happened in most cases a considerable time ago in privately run institutions, and therefore the information available to us all is limited. However, as far as we can establish on the facts available, the vast majority of women who went to these institutions went there voluntarily, or if they were minors, with the consent of their parents or guardians.
The Magdalen Groups, of course, received an emotional apology from the Taoiseach following the McAleese report a year ago.
I'm deeply sorry and offer my full and heartfelt apologies. At the conclusion of my discussions with one group of the Magdalen women, one of those present sang Whispering Hope. A line from that song stays in my mind. When the dark midnight is over, watch for the breaking of day. Let me hope that this day and this debate, heralds a new dawn for all those who feared that the dark midnight might never end.
Despite this, the four religious orders who own the laundries refused to contribute to the compensation scheme. So what could the government do about this?
I would ask them to reflect on the question of a monetary contribution here. I can't force them to do that. I can't take away the charitable status like some have been talking for. This is an issue that they know about themselves. And that's the position.
What worries many is the difficulty in drawing a line under any events like this happening again and again. For example, as the Taoiseach was apologising to the Magdalen Groups, the state was still refusing to take responsibility for the abuse of Louise O'Keefe. The state, the European Court of Human Rights had decided, had employed her abuser Leo Hickey. She received her apology just last week. Furthermore, it was only as late as 2009 that the state was pursuing Louise O'Keefe for €500,000 in costs.
There's nobody responsible for what happened to me as a child. There's just simply no responsibility. There has been more support for Hickey than there has been for me from the department. It's outrageous. As you've seen in court, they immediately sought their costs. At a time when we're looking forward to Christmas, I really don't know what I'm going to do. At the very least, I'd hope that they would not continue to seek those costs, and I would beg and plead with them to waive all costs. I would have to, for the sake of my children and myself.
Why did you take it this far, Louise?
I had to. One of the reasons I took the case was because something happened to me that shouldn't have. I was abused as a little girl. It was wrong. When a wrong is done to a child, there should be responsibility accepted. Why the department could not and will not accept that responsibility is beyond me. I had to try. I had to do my best. I believed what I was doing was the right thing to do. And even with hindsight, I would do it all again because I was wronged.
How many more people await the type of justice Louise eventually received is unclear, but even this cursory look at the state's most recent past does not augur well.
A harrowing report there from Donal O'Herlihy. Well, Louise O'Keefe joins us now tonight from Cork. Louise, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
We heard Michael O'Brien at the start of Donal's report there so graphically describing the effect that the state's refusal to believe him had on him. What effect would you say your battle has had on you?
Well, it obviously has an effect because there's the huge weight of taking a case to the High Court and subsequently even to the Supreme Court. And the burden that followed with that when costs were awarded against me in the High Court, you bare your soul inside in the courtroom about what has happened to you, the effect it has, and that is all multiplied again by the fact that the state that you feel are responsible and subsequently have been held so, defend their case strenuously against you and then seek costs on top of that, which would ruin you, you know?
Is it almost like a continuation of the abuse?
Oh, it is. And one of the things that I found extremely upsetting as well was the fact that so soon, like after the Supreme Court judgment, the fact that the State Claims Agency would so quickly write out to the 135 other people using my name and the judgment that was handed down to pressure and bully those people into dropping cases. The fact that they used my name, I mean, it really was stressful. It really was. I was a victim of abuse in the school, and they used me against other victims of abuse in school. It was just harrowing. It really was.
And reflecting on it now, Louise, can any part of you even begin to figure out why the state fought you for so long?
I'll never understand it. I simply will never understand why they could fight a case like that so strenuously. And they did so right into the European Court and right through all the submissions and into the public hearing. They fought it as strenuously as possible. You just wouldn't believe it.
And as we'll hear over the course of the programme, the state is still involved in battles with the survivors of the Magdalene laundries, with the survivors of some physiotomies. What do you say to the government, the current government?
I really do believe that, they simply must own up to the responsibility that is the state's and stop dilly-dallying about sorting things out. Where they have made promises to the people from the Magdalene laundries, keep those promises. Where they've been held to account for the abuse that has happened to children in the national schools, own up to it and solve it.
And just finally, Louise, the Taoiseach apologised for what happened to you last week. He also apologised for the horrendous experience that you went through. And you were very generous in your response to that apology. But some people have said, that apology could be interpreted as an apology for Hickey's abuse of you rather than an apology for the state's refusal to accept responsibility for it. Which interpretation do you put on the apology?
Well, I personally, I have taken the apology to mean that the Taoiseach apologised on behalf of the state for the abuse that was committed on me in the schools. And I would personally like to think that he was also apologising for what the state did to me in pursuing for 15 and a half years a case against me.
That wasn't explicit, though, in his
apology. It wasn't explicit, but I would like to think that he was apologising on all accounts.
Louise, we appreciate you taking our call tonight and thank you very much indeed for joining us. That's Louise O'Keefe joining us live this evening from Cork, 19 minutes past 10. With me here in studio in Dublin, Stephen O'Riordan from the Magdalene Survivors Together Group, Ruan MacAidan, barrister and advisor to the survivors of some physiotomy, Justine McCarthy, columnist with the Sunday Times, and Fine Gael TD Alan Farrell, who sits on the Justice Committee of the Oireachtas. Stephen, I'll come to you first because I think it's almost a year ago that we were all in the studio talking about the Magdalene survivors, their apology from Enda Kenny, and looking forward to the redress scheme, which we also debated extensively on this programme. Almost a year on from Justice Quirk's report, have the women received any compensation or redress yet?
Well, they've started receiving their compensation, but I think the system that has been set up or the mechanisms that have been put in place have been, in my opinion, a barrier or an obstacle. And I don't find the restorative justice team any helpful. I don't find them very cooperative. I don't find them useful. I don't find them giving good advice. I don't find them kind of helpful in the sense of guiding the women as to what their entitlements are or when they're going to get their money. I actually find as if it's almost that the women had a cancer and they were cancer stricken for many, many years, and the cancer disappeared on the 19th of February 2013, and it almost viciously came back and started attacking them and is slowly sapping any sort of energy that they have. In particular, there's one lady, Diane Crogan, who received a letter 2 days ago, and the letter is literally a copy and paste job of a letter that I received almost 2 years ago in relation to Summerhill. And it is word for word. It is like somebody sat inside the Department of Justice and copied and pasted a letter to this woman. And at the very end of it said, we did review your case, but by the way, we really don't believe you because we're still only going to give you 9 months. And the reason they're giving her 9 months is because they're saying that the religious orders checked and verified her record and the record stands. But it would appear
they're saying she only was in Summerhill for 9 months.
There's a record to show that she was there for 9 months. And what they're saying is that they've checked and verified the record with the religious order. And because Diane has sent in nearly 6 or 7 or 8 foolscap pages of clear outlined logical analysis of what happened to her in the 4 years, they're effectively saying, we don't believe you, so therefore you're only getting 9 months. And if you don't like that, go to the ombudsman. Rang the ombudsman today, the number that was given, and I was on the line for 15 minutes where a message is played back. And that was just me ringing on behalf of Diane. And that's the system that we're dealing with. I worked out that the 61 women that I've dealt with have given 554 years slave labour to this state. They have given over 1,555,000 hours of work, and they're being treated like this. It is completely and utterly unacceptable.
And Stephen, you have said they have begun to receive some compensation, but are they also being demanded of to sign a waiver that they will not take any further action against the state?
Yeah, and we effectively asked the Minister for Justice, would he lift the statute of limitations to allow women that didn't feel comfortable or didn't feel happy going through the scheme? And he said no. And I can't believe that when I think and listen back to the apology that Andy Kenny gave, and I'm suddenly beginning to think that they were actually crocodile tears and we all fell for it, almost like an episode of Home and Away where you think to yourself, we live in a sunny island and suddenly a big storm comes along. And that was the big storm. It was a big joke, really, at the end of the day. They didn't really mean the apology. They didn't really want to help the women, because if they did, like when they brought in the agreement for the Anglo banks and saving the banks, they did that overnight. And yet a year on, we have nearly 700 women waiting to receive their full entitlement. We asked them, could they receive the full entitlement? We were told no. We asked when the monument was being put in place. We're looking at it. We asked them when the enhanced medical card would be delivered. We're looking at it. It might not be till April, maybe June, maybe May. And that's completely and utterly unacceptable, to think that this is the way these women who have fought their entire lives, just like Louise O'Keefe have done, they have fought a system. They've proven that they were right. And then when they go to get their compensation, and it's in black and white, please provide the evidence that you were there. How in God's name can you provide evidence of your stay if their religious orders were so bloody inadequate at keeping records to show that you were there? I would like Enda Kenny to come into the Dáil and explain publicly how it is physically possible for a survivor to prove she was there when the bloody record is not there, when the religious order covered up. And we know that happened because we know with the industrial schools that they were transferred from industrial schools to Magdalen laundries, and these were girls that were supposed to be in school. They covered up. So when does this actually physically stop? There's two women in our group that have already died. They will receive no compensation. We've been made aware there's over 130 women in the care of the religious order, or the HSE, whatever way you want to look at it, but they never left the laundry. As soon as the compensation was announced, I was made aware of 10 women who were in Cork, and there was a solicitor brought up to these women, and they were all told that they were going to make wills. And it suddenly has transpired now that these 10 women have made these wills, leaving money to the religious order. And it has now transpired that these 130 women who are in the care of the HSE or the religious order, whatever way you want to look at it, potentially could be leaving nearly 10 million of their compensation money to the religious orders because they're being coaxed into making wills. That is a complete and utter travesty that that's going on. And I don't want to be attacking a member of the Fine Gael party, but I think I'm verbally communicating what the women feel. I can't believe that someone is asked again to write 6 or 7 fool's cap pages detailing and outlining what happened to them to prove they were there.
And Stephen, one question just before I move to Alan Farrell of Fine Gael. If the women refuse to sign the waiver, which states that they won't take any further action against the state, will they not get any compensation at this point?
They get nothing, and there is no system obviously in place for them to do something else outside that. And clearly, as we all know, we're not stupid, that if they do take a case, the statute of limitations kicks in, and a lot of the women who were in the laundries or the abuse happened with the nuns have passed away. So there is no case, and we know that the state have won in that sense. So there's no point in talking about that.
Alan Farrell, what do you say to all of that?
Where do I begin, Audrey? Well, first things first, and probably quite a significant point that Stephen has made that I'm going to correct. Any of the survivors of the Magdalen laundries who passes away will receive compensation.
No,
it's quite
no. not,
well.
Not,
if you
that's
if you don't mind, if you don't mind, it's quite explicit. It's here in front of me in black and white. It is on the Department of Justice website.
And what does it say?
It says, I'll read it out to you, depending on the duration of stay, eligible women will be entitled to between 11,500 and 100,000, depending on duration, amounts over 50,000 being paid bi-weekly instalment. It also said that registered an expression of interest, of which 650 women have done so already, up to the end of January, I understand. Expression of interest by the department submitted an application but has passed away before payment, a lump sum of 50,000 will be paid to their estate. So it has to be clarified.
It's then up to the state to apply to have the estate of that woman paid back into the state. I actually checked that point with the solicitor about 2 months ago.
I don't think there's any accuracy in that statement, I'm afraid, because the subject to the finalisation of the necessary documentation in conjunction with the Attorney General's office, this
when there is no beneficiary,
is, as I said, all black
will,
and white.
Well,
sorry, can I?
Open to the
well, sorry, can I say
to
that any person in this state who passes away with no beneficiary, if they don't have a family. Unfortunately, that is the case. But can I back to, you mentioned, Stephen, in regards to wills that are made under duress. We have a barrister here who will tell you quite clearly that any will that is made under duress is a worthless piece of paper. So I don't know where that emanates from. I'm not a legal mind myself.
And what happens,
but what I would say,
what happens when the person has passed away, their relative comes along, they've helped him fill out this form, and suddenly, miraculously...
Well, I think given the circumstances,
Stephen,
sorry, if I may, given the circumstances of the particular individual and the trauma that they have faced in their life and the fact that these matters are now very much in the public domain, I sincerely doubt that any person who was either in the Magdalen laundries or subject to a clerical abuse or whatever... drew up a will a number of years ago, clearly under duress or hoodwinked into doing it, would in fact leave their money to the church. I would find that bizarre.
I know we have other stuff to talk about, but there was one lady, Madge O'Connell,
well,
who passed.
I don't think it's appropriate to get into the specifics of individuals.
See, because
quite frankly,
he has a specific example. There is a specific example.
A lady passed away who had cancer. She was living in Marymount Hospice. Her nephew was looking after her, Patrick Fitzgerald. They asked me to come down and help her fill out the form for the scheme, which meant that she would have been entitled to 100,000 because she spent 54 years in a Magdalen laundry. I helped fill out the form. She made it clear that she wanted her nephew to get anything if anything happened to her because she was so old. I said that was no problem. It would all be sorted. I realised and went back to the minister and said, can you please include anyone that has filled out a form since the apology and up to June to ensure that they would be entitled to compensation, because that wasn't actually part of the scheme or the apology that those women would get money if they passed away. He said that would be included, and it was included in John Cork's report. She passed away. They made inquiries and they were told by the restorative justice team that they aren't entitled to make inquiries because they're not beneficiaries in the will. So if her family is not a beneficiary in the will, who is the beneficiary in the will?
Her family can contest it, Stephen, I'm sure.
But the point of fact is there's 130 women residing in institutions. They suddenly have all started making wills and the money is coming in and suddenly they all pass away.
OK,
and
Alan, it's impossible for me to speak to that. Let me bring in Barrister Ruan MacAidan. You want to say something more?
Well, it's just on the issue of instalments for the Magdalen scheme. My understanding of it is, and I read the Cork report, was that any lump sums above 50,000 euro you'd be paid in weekly instalments. Now, they'll cease when the survivors die. And that's the first ever redress scheme to have made instalments in, or to have made payments in the form of instalments. Right. All the other redress schemes up to that date was a lump sum payment.
It's actually quite specific,
the second,
though, Ruan.
Sorry, Alan, just the second point I'd like to make is that there's actually no legal representation provided for Magdalen's survivors. So this was something that was provided in the Hepatitis C tribunal, also for victims under residential institutional abuse, and also for survivors from the Lourdes Hospital. Again, this is something that's not provided for.
Well, there's
for
a provision. There's a provision of 500 euro plus VAT towards legal costs to cover women who wish to seek independent legal counsel. That statement has been made on a number of occasions. It is on, as we speak, on the Department of Justice website.
And Alan,
it's in front of me, and I'll give it to you if you wish.
Presumably you reject any sort of accusation that the government is now, almost a year on from Justice Quirk's report, that put in place the redress scheme is putting obstacles in the way. But there's still
absolutely
no legislation in place to give effect to it.
Absolutely no obstacles being put in place deliberately. There are no obstacles from the Department of Justice or from the Department of Health or from the Department of Social Protection, who are all working together with the view to pushing forward legislation in order to give these women the social welfare entitlements that they deserve, given the circumstances and the disgraceful treatment that you know, they suffered throughout their lives. And in certain cases, as Stephen has mentioned, over 50 years, which is a very difficult thing to consider.
But according to Maeve O'Rourke, who's a barrister with the Justice for Magdalen's Research, in a letter to the Irish Times today, I mean, she's saying that the letters that the women are getting at the moment, there is no mention of the private healthcare provision, the healthcare for the women living abroad, a dedicated unit to provide advice and support. There's no even provision for a simple helpline that Justice Cork recommended.
Well, let me start at the top of that particular letter. First and foremost, I spoke with Minister Shatter quite extensively before I came on the programme, and I can say that the Minister is very frustrated by that letter, as indeed the department or the section within the department is, because they've been working very, very hard with over 650 applicants, 200 of whom have received letters in the last number of weeks. They will receive compensation very, very shortly. The rest are being processed. There are, unfortunately, as unpleasant as it may be, there are necessary proofs that have to be provided in order for people to qualify for this particular form of redress. And it has to be assessed by the department in conjunction with the records that are being provided by the religious orders. It isn't an ideal scenario, but in certain cases you're talking about 50, 60 years of abuse, and you're talking about the necessary proofs being provided by these religious institutions.
Could it not be argued that it's a continuation of the abuse? Because these women gave all that to the McAleese report.
I don't accept that, because I don't accept that for a very simple reason. The very fulsome and comprehensive apology that An Taoiseach delivered in the Dáil outlined that the, as he quoted, I think, in that piece that you played back, you know, that this is a new dawn, a new start. And while the state dragged its heels for decades on this issue, and indeed on the other issue that we're going to discuss, and indeed in the case of Louise O'Keefe, we have and are beginning to set about and put forward legislation which will give these women the necessary social welfare supports. But can I say that quite a number of these women are living in the UK, And it was necessary for us to work with the UK authorities to ensure that if we provided them with compensation, that it wouldn't have an effect on their entitlements in the United Kingdom. Indeed, we had to make sure that if we were providing them with money on a weekly basis, for instance, or on a monthly basis, that it wouldn't impinge upon certain entitlements that they have in the United Kingdom. All of that work has taken time. In regards to medical cards, in regards to social welfare top-ups for those who are not receiving the full entitlement that they deserve, and I use that word deliberately, deserve, that has taken time for us to ensure that everybody who is correctly assessed through the department with the 650 individuals who have applied for this form of redress are properly processed and, and given the correct entitlements.
Okay.
There is no deliberate act to delay this process. And as I've said, I spoke with the minister earlier. I happen to know that there is a very fulsome response to that letter has been sent in.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I couldn't get it by the time we went on the air, but it'll be in the papers very
shortly. Justine, is that fair enough? It's a very complex, detailed legal issue and it takes time.
No, I just don't accept it at all. I think the ages of the women have to be taken into account. That is a very significant consideration. When you were talking to Louise O'Keefe, Audrey, you asked her why did she think that the state defended that case the whole way through the courts, dragged her through the courts. I'm going to try and answer that question. And I believe the answer is money. Everything is always about money. And because our legal system is built entirely on measuring everything in terms of pounds, shillings and pence, the minute there is a complaint about anything in this country, the first response is lawyer up. Get your lawyer's advice. Fortunately, there are some fine human rights lawyers in this country who are making great change. And I would include Louise O'Keefe's lawyers in that category. But the state used the threat of impoverishment to try to stop Louise O'Keefe taking her case. They tried to get their legal costs from her after the Supreme Court. They used the bribe of not pursuing the other 135 plaintiffs for the costs of their actions up to the point they terminated them in order to be rid of that. I think money is a major consideration in every single redress and compensation scheme.
Doesn't it have to be?
I think money has to be a consideration when people have suffered injury, because people have to be compensated for their pain and suffering, and they have to have the financial wherewithal to deal with their health and medical issues. But I don't think that paying people money trumps vindicating their human rights. And I think that was the big difference in the Louise O'Keefe case. The European Court of Human Rights dealt with the vindication of her human rights. It did make a financial award. I think it was 30,000. It was a nominal amount. And all throughout, she kept saying, I'm not in this for money. Money is not important. It's for the children of Ireland. And that is what she achieved. And that is the constant refrain in every case I have covered. Every abuse victim I have met, without exception, has credibly said, I'm not interested in the money. I want recognition of what has happened to me and I want an apology. And I think until we change our legal system, we're going to be stuck in this rut that everything is going to be about money. And the cost of that is human dignity, it's human rights, it's fairness and it's a just society, and we're not going to have those until we change that system.
Ruan, I'll come to you because I want to move on to the other issue that we're discussing tonight, and you're a barrister and advisor to the survivors of symphysiotomy.
That's correct, yes.
Where are the women at now?
Well, I just want to touch on something that Louise O'Keefe had mentioned, and that's the state owning up to its own responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Now, in respect to survivors of symphysiotomy, they have not done that. They've stood by the Walsh report which was published in its draft format a year and a half ago. That's a whitewash that seeks to justify symphysiotomy, that glosses over issues like patient consent.
The women didn't contribute to that.
Survivor testimony was excluded. Mm-hmm. There's a number of misrepresentations in that report. One of them, for example, is that it was carried out in emergency operations. We know that symphysiotomies were planned procedures and that were done in preference to caesarean section. So James Riley has stood by this Walsh report. He's had the final version since May of last year, and he's refusing to publish it. Secondly, they have announced that they will no longer support the statute of limitations bill, which had been unanimously
This was Kevin O'Kalon's bill to lift the statute of limitations to allow the women.
Well, it was to make their path to the courts mm-hmm. much easier. Mm-hmm. There are a number of High Court actions that are proceeding through the courts. Survivors of symphysiotomy are looking for three things. They're looking for a statement of truth. And what that means is an admission of wrongdoing, that the operations should never have been performed. Secondly, they are looking for awards of damages that are commensurate to the awards that you'd be entitled to in the High Court. And that's to put you back in the position you would have been prior to these injurious mm-hmm. Operations. And then thirdly, they were looking for the right to representation and the payment for medical reports.
So the government said it would support the lifting of the statute.
The government, well, all TDs in the Dáil supported the bill at second stage, but the government announced last December effectively that they were going to do a U-turn and no longer support the statute of limitations bill. It's made the path to the courts slightly more difficult, but legal cases are proceeding and survivors of symphysiotomy have announced that all actions shall continue in the High Court until the government meets those three demands.
But if the statute of limitations isn't lifted, how far will they get in their cases?
Well, all legal cases are proceeding. They're proceeding on the basis that survivors issued within a sufficient period of time, and they are not statute barred. So all actions will continue. Now, survivors have asked to meet James Riley on a number of occasions with their representatives with these three demands. He's ignored those requests for a meeting. You know, he didn't have the decency to even tell them that he wasn't supporting their bill in December. And he's decided upon this paternalistic path of establishing an ex gratia scheme that would seem to be similar to that that was established for the Magdalens. Now, ex gratia means that it's done in kindness. It's not about liability. So there's no admission of wrongdoing. And the other thing is that there's going to be no guarantee that the private hospitals who are primarily responsible for these barbaric operations will contribute to this fund. So it's been the decision of survivors of symphysiotomy to take their cases forward in the High Court because that is the only way in which they can get an effective remedy.
OK, Alan Farrell, you rejected accusations of obstacles being put in the way of the Magdalen survivors and their redress. How do you justify the U-turn on supporting the lifting of the statute of limitations?
My understanding of it is that the advice that's been provided to the Department of Health, to Minister Riley and the government, is that it would it would not improve the chances in a courtroom for the survivors to bring a successful case. Not only that, it is also felt that it wouldn't actually speed up the process for any of the 150 to 200 survivors who are still alive. That statement was actually made on the floor of the Dáil in mid-December. I'm not aware of the minister making other public pronouncements, but if he made it on the floor of the Dáil, it's a public matter. So the matter we are now dealing with is for retired judge Yvonne Murphy, who the minister appointed at the end of November, to go through the process of evaluating what the next steps are, evaluating the report that
it's
has
just
been presented
after
to her.
Delay well, after delay, isn't it?
I think with respect to the work that is being done by Justice Murphy, on this issue. It's a very short period of time that she has been given. I understand it's 8 weeks, which in fact, if you take Christmas into consideration, expires about now. Mm-hmm. So we are expecting a response imminently.
But you heard the woman in Dawn's report saying, he's waiting for me to die.
I would much rather discuss that after the minister and the government have been properly informed as to what the next steps are. And at that point, I would feel much more comfortable discussing the issue. But there is no doubt from my own perspective, from the perspective of the full support that Cuilín Ó Cualann received when that particular bill was put forward. But the main thrust of it, of course, wasn't about the legalistic issue of the statute of limitations. It was about the barbaric operations that took place 1500.
The issue was of the bill was to set aside any procedural obstacles that could be put in place of the survivors.
Sorry to cut across you, my apologies. Yeah. But that's the point that was made by the legal advice that was provided to the minister and to the government, that it wouldn't, in fact, remove the obstacles.
But it
was according to the advice,
there's been mixed signals from the government on the issue of the statute. But nevertheless, I mean, I would remind Alan that on a number of occasions, survivors of symphysiotomy have asked for meetings with the minister. It's within the minister's power to settle these cases involving the private hospitals and public hospitals. That's within his power if he so chooses to do. But what he's decided to do instead is to go down the route of another exclusionary ex gratia scheme that denies any liability, and that's based on the Walsh report. The Walsh report is a complete whitewash. It seeks to justify the unjustifiable. Survivors have to go forward in the High Court on that basis.
Can I just say, Stephen, what's Minister Riley's issue with meeting these women?
I'm Stephen, to answer your question directly, I'm not actually aware as to what it is. I'm not aware if the minister.
I mean, he goes on the Sean O'Rourke show.
I think it's very easy to stand up and say.
He does crocodile tears like Enda Kenny and says, I'd love to give a proper health service, and the outpatients and the inpatients all deserve to have proper healthcare, and this is not the system that I want, and this is not the health department that I'm running. And yet these ladies are looking to meet a minister who's been democratically elected and voted by people who are over 18, and he won't meet them. I mean, it just seems ludicrous to think that there's a minister who's well aware of these women's stories and he's refusing to meet them.
Can I say something in response to that, if you don't mind? The minister met with representative groups of the survivors in August, and I understand that those discussions have taken place on a number of occasions. So it isn't appropriate or fair to say that he's refused to meet people on this issue.
You'd have to speak with
the minister directly on the matter to get a response. But can I just say that there's no question here of the minister trying to dodge this. The minister has done something, a little bit like, I suppose, Minister Shatter taking ownership of the previous matter we were discussing by taking steps after only 3 months in office. In this particular matter, yes, there was a report commissioned some time ago. That has now been analysed properly so that the correct steps can be taken by the minister himself.
Just briefly, I mean, the report is a whitewash, Alan.
I'm not going to get into an argument with you about your interpretation of the report.
The report is a whitewash.
I don't agree with you.
I don't know, but the report seeks to justify symphysiotomy. So it depends on what your view is of symphysiotomy. The second point I would make is that the minister has made clear in this redress scheme that the awards that will be given to survivors will not be commensurate to any kind of damages that they would be entitled to in the High Court.
Okay.
So therefore, it would seem as though...
I want to move on just to the wider issue, I suppose, of the state's responsibility to its citizens. But before I do, I just want to bring you some breaking news, some sad news, really. The police, who were looking for missing 18-year-old Patrick Halpin in London, have found a body tonight. It was discovered at 10 to 8 this evening in an area just off Leicester Square. So that news coming in tonight from London. Well, our regular contributor, the author and the comedian Colm O'Regan, has been wondering who we are all currently turning a blind eye to.
As a middle-class, 30-something, straight, white, Irish male with no children, I'm probably in the demographic least likely to be affected by being forgotten by the state. I do have a dose of negative equity. I'm part of the squeezed middle. I rage frequently at the universal social charge, but otherwise life's not too bad. By and large, the state and I are on a relatively even keel. In fact, I'm in the forgetting class, the voting vocal group whose opinion the government might listen to, or at least every 5 years pay lip service to listening to, if that's possible. But chances are, most of us in this privileged grouping won't really use our privilege to help others. When the scandals of the last 70 years emerged, the younger generations turned to older generations and asked incredulously, "Did you not know this was happening?" And the older generations replied that now they came to think of it, they did remember how the young lads in the industrial school seemed to be always skinny and the girls from the laundries were dressed in rags. And the younger generations asked, "And did you not say anything?" And the older generations replied, "Ah, they were different times and no one spoke up about anything." The hegemonies of the church and various professional classes meant it was easy for the government to forget because no one reminded them. Now, the church no longer has the same power, and there is a healthy cynicism about government. Still, it mightn't be any harm to ask, is there anyone we're forgetting as we speak? Obviously, it's impossible to answer that. If you've forgotten something, you won't remember you've forgotten it, but still, it might be useful to do a quick check. Have we forgotten travellers and their infant mortality rates that are still 3.5 times that of the rest of the population? Have we forgotten those with mental health difficulties? Have we forgotten carers? What about asylum seekers who may have fled war or persecution, who are stuck in soulless rooms in asylum centres, prevented from working and possibly suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder? What about trafficked women? Are the foreign labourers left high and dry by swindles in the construction boom? What about victims of crime, especially the elderly? Is there their mental health been looked after? Are there any schools we are forgetting where special supports have been cut, so now the integration of the different and recently arrived is not as smooth and which could lead to further disconnection from society? And the Catholic Church mightn't have as much power as it did, but are there any other religions who exert illegal control over our citizens that we are forgetting? Is there anything we are ignoring now that will lead future generations to ask, "And did you not say something?" I'm not being alarmist. I'm sure all of these things are on someone's list. I just thought I'd mention it before I forget it.
That was Colm O'Regan there. Justine, it's a fair question, isn't it?
It is. And I was just jotting down my own list here, and I jotted down a number of words that he uttered: travellers, asylum seekers. I put prisoners down there. I'd put whistleblowers. I'm aware of a number of whistleblowers who are going through hell at the moment. I'd say survivors of Bethany Home. But I would also emphasise abuse victims. That story is not over. We've reached the point, really, where we're almost treating that as historical. It's not. I'm aware of a case where 9 children aged 8 disclosed to their parents. These were children attending a small rural school, that they were being sexually abused by 2 teachers. That case has been under investigation by a state body for the last 4 years. It is blighted with writs flying all over the place behind the scenes. And this is something that we haven't dealt with at all. The whole, that awful word, the process. The way we deal with it is we hand, first of all, we call in the guards, we do the big investigation, send the file to the DPP. The DPP either will or won't decide to bring charges. There has to be a fairly winnable case generally before charges are brought. It then goes into court, and on a technicality, it can fall. And that's the end of it. In other countries, they do it the other way around. Or they actually wait until the judicial process is over, and then the various institutions will do their own. And I have to say, in fairness to the Catholic Church, it is doing it in its way. That report, the UN report on the Vatican yesterday, while I thought, you know, 99% of it was excellent and needed to be said, I thought that the Church should have been given credit. In Ireland, now I know it's different in the different countries, but in Ireland, I'm aware of priests who were acquitted in the courts of the land, who were subsequently defrocked in secret canonical tribunals. But there's still, there's such... It's very frustrating because we get these reports and then we have these national fits of outrage, and then, as your contributor said there, we all go back to discussing the economy again. Mm. And particularly as a woman, I just find it. I was at this amazing event last night in NUI Maynooth called Remembering Anne Lovett, the 15-year-old girl who died in Granard after giving birth to a son 30 years ago. And it was one of the most inspiring nights of my life. And it was just amazing, the number of names of girls and women who have changed this country because of the awful lives that they've had. And I'm talking about not just Anne Lovett, Joanne Hayes, Lavinia Kerwick, Eileen Flynn, the teacher who was sacked for living with a married man, Louise O'Keefe, who you talked to. The list goes on and on.
And Alan Farrell, isn't that a fair point that, you know, abuse of children is not historical, it's current, and given the scale of it, and we can only go by the sexual abuse and violence report from 12 years ago. The figures of sexual abuse suffered by children was horrific. Mm. There doesn't seem to be an equally proportionate response to it.
I think for sure, you know, when you chronicle the lists of victims of abuse, whether they be institutional, religious, state or otherwise, on a historic basis, I mean, it really is troubling. I've looked back at this over the last few years since I was elected to the Dáil, and you as Colm in his column outlined, you know, did you not notice these? You know, you go to some of the schools, you know, the Christian Brothers, the manner in which their students were treated, and that's not that long ago. You know, you listen to Michael O'Brien at the top of the show with that, if Michael will forgive me for saying that, you know, amazing watershed moment, that amazing piece of television that we all watched back and thought, is this the moment where the right thing will be done at last? And I accept your point, Justine, when you say, you know, are we going to approach all of these cases of institutional or state abuse of children in the same proportion that we're dealing with others? I would hope that we can. I would hope that we as a society will try to deal with these issues, because
we're almost out of time, so I just want to get the other two guests in just before we go. Stephen, do you think society is way ahead of...
I think we're seeing a modern revolution, and I think the Irish women are at the forefront of, I suppose, creating the revolution. And I'm lucky enough to grow up in a household with my own sister, who is a disability, I suppose, activist.
It's Joanne.
Mm-hmm. And I've been very lucky to live with my mother and someone that didn't go to university or didn't have the, I suppose, the confetti of a great life, and to see how she's managed and lived a life and give a life to someone like Joanne, and then to hear someone like Louise O'Keefe. And the comparison I make there is that when Joanne was born, my mother was told by a doctor, like, that the best thing you could do with Joanne is put her into home and forget about her. And yet, when I listened to Louise O'Keefe and when I heard her saying that it was an 8-year-old girl fighting that case, I often think to myself, Joanne could have been a 17-year-old girl fighting a case for being locked up just because she physically looked different. And I think we should be enormously proud of Irish women in society. And I think they've given us more, I suppose, to feel happy about and maybe to talk about than what men have offered. And unfortunately, the demographic of men in the Dáil seems to be of an age that I myself would consider to be my grandfather or my uncle. That would be embarrassing at a party. But hopefully that's changing.
Real. Yeah, I completely agree with Stephen, what he was saying. The state, I don't think, has changed very much. It seems to be as reactionary as ever. The redress screens that they are creating are getting worse. But it's people like Louise O'Keefe that are making real changes in society. And in that particular case, what it did establish was that every citizen who's had their constitutional or human rights violated has a right to an effective remedy. Mm-hmm. So I think she did a tremendous service to society. And I think it gives real hope for survivors who have been excluded by the state and who have been fighting the state for many, many years.
OK, thank you all very much indeed. Late Debate is back on Tuesday at 10. Till then, have a lovely weekend.
The Late Debate, presented by Audrey Carville, was produced by Donal O'Herlihy. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney. The researcher was Richie Byrne. And on sound tonight was Bryony October.